brought to you by Burr Foreman and broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Results Matter Radio. Thanks to our good friends at Burr Foreman. Stone, we've had quite a busy week, haven't we?
We most certainly have. We actually, 2 weeks in a row, we were up in Raleigh doing the CED Tech Venture thing, where we got an opportunity to visit with so many aspiring entrepreneurs looking for seed money.
Mm-hmm.
And then last week out in San Francisco and
covering
to Chinatown.
Covering the America's Cup?
Yes, covering the America's Cup. Wasn't that funny when we were interviewing like some big wig with Oracle, and we got this big loud
cheer
rush.
Yeah. When they won.
And we thought it was for us at first.
It wasn't.
It was for Larry and the crew. But that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed doing those remote broadcasts. You get to do, I mean, the interviews are shorter and
right.
They're faster, but high energy, very chaotic environment. But, man, it was a lot of IQ points walking that carpet, wasn't it?
Just like today.
Yeah, just like today. This is going to be a fantastic segment. We have a studio full here for Results Matter Radio. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Gary McGraw and Marcus Random. They are going to talk about an upcoming event. We're also going to get a chance to talk with John Fountain with the Rawls Group.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. 2013 Best Places to Work for Large Companies, so I'm interested in that. But first up on Results Matter this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Executive Director of the Governor's Office of Workforce Development. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Blake Ashe. How you doing, man?
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. So tell us, what are you guys up to out there at the workforce?
Well, up to a lot. We've specifically, my office is involved in making sure that Georgia has a competitive workforce. So we're doing a couple of programs that we're excited about. The first is what we call Go Build Georgia, which is specifically geared to skilled trades. So I don't know if any of y'all know this, but for every four people who leave the skilled trades industry, only one person comes into it.
What, can you define skilled trade?
Well, it's
like a radio producer's, you know, highly right. skilled, highly technical stuff.
Stuff you can't outsource.
Right.
Stuff
only
you can't
a few
outsource.
People can do.
Exactly. Stuff that has to be done here. You know, we're talking plumbers, welders, boiler makers, masonry folks, construction mm-hmm. guys. We target five sectors, which is energy and manufacturing, logistics, telecommunications. But, yeah, we've been working hard trying to make sure that Georgia stays competitive economically. The governor's competitive initiative is what the governor uses to look at industry as a whole and see how Georgia can become more business-friendly and make sure that we attract workers here. So we're hard doing that, and Go Build is a special part of that because, like I said, the amount of skilled trades work that's out there right now and trying to drive the message that these aren't just the typical old, you know, your father's skilled trade industry. These are highly technical jobs with good pay and good careers and want kids and their parents to understand what that lifestyle is about and let them know that there's other things you can do besides go to four-year college.
Are you trying to grab the kids to show them this path?
Well, we're starting specifically in ninth grade. So mm-hmm. We have what we're calling Go Build Georgia High School teams. Right now we're in about half the public high schools in the state with the hope of being in every public high school by the end of this academic year. So these teams can be anything from information that a school counselor, guidance counselor may have to let the kids know about it and informational sorts of things, anywhere from that to an after-school activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be a club or where you learn about skilled trades and partner with industry professionals in that area. And some of them even become competitions. So we're a partner with Skills USA, which is a huge trades and skilled trades expo, and these kids have teams from all over the country and they compete this year. I think we had 11 gold medals for Georgia teams in the Kansas City Nationals.
Mm-hmm.
So we're real proud of it and think that it's a great program and trying to make sure that you know, we're filling some of those jobs.
So now how much of a need is there?
Well, there's a huge need. I mean, right now, we project that there's probably 300,000 construction jobs that'll be needed by 2020 in Georgia alone. So every year we have about an 80,000 shortfall of folks who are looking for jobs. And we have a great partner, Superior Plumbing, who's been very helpful. And just anecdotally, I know that Jay Cunningham is advertising in 11 different states right now looking for plumbers.
So there's a shortage of some of these skilled labor jobs. And is it because the kids are they dropping out of school so they're not even skilled enough to do these things? There's not a path for them to learn the trade? Like, where's the gap for you guys?
Well, a lot of it is the negative misconception about it. So you've got, parents a lot of times thinking that their kids have to go to a four-year college.
Like it's college or else you're like a failure.
Yeah.
And so you're trying to re-educate them to say that this is a viable path for a lot of kids if they'd pursue it.
Absolutely. And you know, you don't have to get thousands of dollars in debt to go do these things.
I mean, right.
A typical plumber, for instance, can start off making anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000. And we know folks in the welding and plumbing industry that make over $100,000 doing it. So, and it's really, especially on the welding side, it's really, you know, an art. I mean, you have graphic designers who are great at their jobs, and there's welders who are, I mean, it's a talent.
Right.
And you can get paid for that talent very well. And you can do apprenticeship programs or on-the-job training or go through the technical college system. We have a great technical college system in this state, and which is very affordable for people who are interested in it. And
does the Hope Scholarship apply to technical colleges?
It does. It does. And specifically, actually, in the legislature this year, they dropped the GPA requirements from a 3.0 back down to a 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
There was some concern about money in the HOPE program, and
right.
So they were good enough to be able to find that shortfall and make sure that the funds were there, and so they moved it back down to 2.0. So that certainly helped enrollment and helped people get some other resources to get to school.
So now for you personally, your challenge is educating kids that this is a viable path. Is it also to work with businesses to help them make available opportunities?
It is. And we have several Go Build apprenticeship programs. A couple right now that are great are in the Savannah area with JCB and Maritime Logistics. And we've helped them set up apprenticeship programs with high school kids.
Because Savannah has the port, there's a lot of opportunity there, right?
Right, right. And with that expansion, there's going to be even more possibility, you know,
and you're trying to get ahead of it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we have 17,000 truck driving positions open right now in this state.
17,000.
Yeah. So, I mean, just imagine the, you know, folks who are interested in truck driving and coming out of high school or veterans coming back,
right.
leaving active or reserve duty. I mean, those are positions that are available right now. I mean, you can go out and get a job, get your CDL, make good money. And it's only going to expand as, you know, we get more industries into the state. And as you said, the port, I mean, if we can get the port dredged and get that project going on, then just imagine the amount of dirt that's going to be hauled out of there.
Right. And plus that becomes more of a distribution center where you need the truck drivers to get the goods and get them out throughout the country.
Absolutely. It's going to be more products coming in, more products going out.
What was the root cause? How did we get in this predicament in the first place? Of this gap,
you know, that's a good question. I think it is that negative misconception about things, and as y'all have seen, it's folks think that 4-year college is the only way to go. So that's kind of what's happened. Mike Rowe is a great partner with us through the Go Build program, and has been a spokesperson for us. And he, I don't know if you've seen, he has a program that. He does for skilled trades, and one of the old posters he shows was in his guidance counselor's office, and it said, you know, work smart, not hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a picture of, you know, somebody graduating with a diploma on one side, working, being smart, and on the other side it had a kind of a dirty, grungy guy saying, you know, don't work hard.
Right.
So, you know, and now he's saying, you know, work smart and hard. You know, the old skilled trades jobs aren't, you know, people digging ditches. It's right. Very... technical, well, it's advanced manufacturing, it's stuff that you have to have training for, So it's, I think it's over time it's built up that it's just been some of those negative misconceptions. And thank goodness that the governor realizes this and has put a lot of time and effort into making this program work and expanding it and make sure we have a solid workforce.
Well, there's plenty of, like you alluded to earlier, there's plenty of people with four-year degrees that are hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt and are making your latte.
Yeah. Exactly.
Badly.
There's a lot of English and marketing majors at Starbucks right now. I can promise you that.
Right? Isn't that so?
Oh, absolutely.
So, and not only are they're underemployed, but they're hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt with not really a good path out of it. Where they'd be better served in one of these kind of jobs.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. These are careers. It's mm-hmm. not just, you know. Go get a check. These are things that you can do for a long time.
Like, and there's going to be opportunity for a long time.
Absolutely. You're never going to outsource building a house.
Right. Welding, it's hard to have somebody overseas do that, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, Mike always says people have always want to get to the corner office, but they've forgotten how to build the corner office.
Right.
So, you know, we've got to make sure that, you know, buildings that are getting built, the construction side, and obviously the construction side encompasses a lot of the plumbing and welding and, you know, boiler makers and some of those other things. But, yeah, there's lots of opportunity out there. And you know, with companies coming in, it's important that Georgia's on top of it and make sure that we have the right workforce. I mean, Georgia's the 33rd largest economy in the world. So, you know, we have a lot of great industry here, a lot of great corporate partners, a lot of industry coming in. I mean, engineered floors up in Northeast Georgia or Northwest Georgia is bringing 2,400 jobs in. We've got Hitachi is bringing 500 or so jobs in. Caterpillar is a big project in the Athens area. So there's lots of opportunity out there for advanced manufacturing and logistical and transportation. And so we want to make sure that those jobs can be filled and we have a workforce to do it.
Now, in your role of kind of helping get the word out about this program and attracting more skilled labor, how does this play into the over macro view of bringing industry into Georgia? Like you had alluded to, like, you know, Hitachi and all these other companies are coming in. Do you have to sell them on, look, we have the people here and now we also have a path to getting the worker that you need to fill those jobs?
Absolutely. I was mentioning the competitive initiative earlier, and what they did a couple of years ago is they went around to the 12 different economic development regions around the state and interviewed business people and talked to industry. And the number one issue in 11 out of 12, actually, of those sectors was workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was number two in the other one. You know, you can give companies tax credits and tax incentives and those sorts of things, but if you get in there and you don't have the workforce to
do the job, then
there's a problem. So we look at workforce development really being economic development. I mean, it is the major part of it. I mean, you can entice businesses to come in and say, well, we've got energy manufacturing tax credits, or, you know, you can go to Coffee County or Bartow County or work with the economic development authorities there and do some site selection and those sorts of things. But if the people aren't there, then
what do you do?
You're never going to get it done.
Right. So how do you spend your day every day?
Oh, doing things like this. No, I do this, and we have a lot of other programs besides Go Build. We've got some veterans programs that we're doing right now, specifically for veterans, trying to get veterans into the trucking industry. We call it Troops to Trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Also getting veterans who are leaving active and reserve duty back to work. We have a website, operationworkforce.com, which I would recommend folks who are looking for a job to go there and find information on where veterans can find some work. And we have the fourth largest number of veterans in the state of Georgia, as well as the fourth largest number of veterans returning from active and reserve duty.
So when they return, a huge population live here in Georgia, or they come back home to Georgia?
Huge population. Yeah, not only the bases that we currently have here, folks staying, but folks who are overseas or deployed at another base come back home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that we find these folks jobs, and obviously they have the skill set and the leadership abilities that are natural for any company to be looking for.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of times business says, well, we want to hire veterans, but when you get right down to it, there's not a whole lot going on.
Right.
So we're trying to work with the corporate partners and find those programs that are out there where folks are hiring veterans and where there's opportunities available and make sure that they can do that. We passed a bill this last legislative session, which we call troops to trades. So, and it's specifically in the skilled trades industry, looking at the licensing in the state and seeing what military certification and training would be applicable to the licensing board side.
So they wouldn't have to like start from scratch?
Correct. So if you have a plumber, for instance, who did plumber or HVAC guy in the military and they've got that certification and training, they can come to the state. The state looks at what you've done it through the military and what your rank and those training procedures were and say, okay, well, you only need X and Y to get a license.
Right,
to
instead
do
of A, B, C through Y.
Correct. Right. I mean, if it's two years on the job training, you'll automatically get credit for that.
Right. So that makes it very attractive.
True. And it's important that that we do things like that. And you know, if you've got some of these licenses require tests, and if you have a test that's only given 6 months out of or two once every 6 months, then we want to make sure that the testing procedures can occur earlier. So that folks can leave the
military. They don't have to wait half
back.
A year.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
So you got a lot on your plate?
Got a lot on the plate, yeah.
So what's your backstory? How did you get involved in this line of work?
Well, I was in, graduated from the University of Alabama, Roll Tide. I told you I'd get SEC.
You did.
You meant it.
Graduated from Alabama, went to D.C. for about 8 years and worked for a couple of guys on Capitol Hill and then worked in the Bush administration at Department of Energy and went back to Alabama, actually, and got my law degree and MBA. And then my wife is from the Marietta area, and so we decided to come back here, and the governor was nice enough, good enough to offer me a position, so I started out in his administration over as deputy chief operating officer, and then came to workforce development. So it's been fun. There's a lot of great things going on in the economic development, workforce development area, and we got to make sure that these programs continue to succeed because it is so important for our state.
And then if people want to learn more,
Go to workforce.georgia.gov or gobuildgeorgia.com. It's a great place to go talk about Go Build. And if there's any folks out there who are interested in Go Build or want to partner with us, please call my office. It's Governor's Office of Workforce Development, and you can find all the contact information.
And this is for students, teachers, business. They can all go there and find the appropriate information?
Absolutely. And if they're interested in setting up an apprenticeship program or want to get more involved in Go Build and with one of their local schools, give us a call, contact us.
So the individual schools can reach out to you, or you're working like throughout the system?
Well, we do work with individual school systems. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, we want to get business involved to make sure that they have those partners in the area
right. That
can help, because, you know, these kids are graduating from school and don't necessarily have a path that they want to go down, so they need to get all the information they can to make
right, because I have a kid in high school, and it's a lot of people, it's college or nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't know that there's other opportunity out there, and I think it's a missed opportunity. I think the work you're doing is super important, and to just make them aware. And what are the industries again that you're looking?
It's energy, manufacturing, logistics, transportation, and I'm forgetting one. Telecommunications. Thank you.
There you go. And that's gobuildgeorgia.com, and you can learn more.
Absolutely.
All right. Blake Ashby. It's Ashby, right? I think I said Ashy at the top of the
it
program.
Is.
But
it is.
Blake Ashby with gobuildgeorgia.com. Thanks so much for coming and hanging out
Thank
with
y'all.
Us,
man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We got to have him back, I think. Give us like a periodic report and let us know how things are going.
I'd love
be
to.
Up
I'll
for
give,
that.
You, give you the state of Georgia's workforce and tell you about all the
And if you want to bring some of your partners, the industry partners, and maybe give them an opportunity to explain how you guys
idea.
Work together.
Well, I'd love to. Love to.
All right. You going to hang out with us while we visit with our next
Absolutely.
Guest?
Absolutely.
Okay. Next up on Results Matter, we have with us from Keller Williams Realty First Atlanta, the Rawls Group, Mr. John Fountain. How
Good morning.
You doing, man?
Doing great. Once they get a job, they can buy houses, right?
I know. You were excited when you started hearing some of those numbers with people with jobs
important.
And paychecks, right?
It's important. Thank you, Blake.
So you want to share a little bit about the Rawls Group, what you guys are doing?
Yeah, absolutely. What an honor to be even mentioned or considered nominated for Best Place to Work. And, you know, we've had a good run. We've actually won 4 consecutive years. And in the history, in the worst market, real estate market in history, I think that's a real honor. So,
so what makes you guys the best place to work?
Well, we've got six offices here in Atlanta. We've got two in East, one in East Cobb, one in Smyrna.
Which is really the best out of those six?
So
yeah, let's get down to the nitty gritty.
Save the best for last, right? One in Dunwoody, one in Brookhaven. Mine is in Sandy Springs.
Right.
And we've got about 300 agents and number one selling real estate office in the last 4 years.
So what's your secret sauce?
You know, it all comes down to people. It all comes down to people. The culture and the industry, and we just have a lot of fun together, and we believe that results do matter, and we teach our agents how to go out there and sell houses and make more money and make a difference in people's lives.
So by empowering the agent, then that helps everybody be happy and makes you guys the best.
You'd have a hard time to come into our office and not get a high five or a hug and, you know, just have a lot of fun.
So do you work with novice agents like that they've never done this before, or do you work with experienced agents? How does that work?
Both. We've seen a lot of agents getting into the business right now. There's a ton of people getting the real estate
license. Because
there
was a shakeout before, right? You lost a lot of the people who were, I'm on the tennis team and I'm also in real estate, you know, those kind of.
What we find is the level of income per agent goes up, the number of agents goes up. And then the reverse is true as well. As the level of income starts to come down, then the number of agents go down. And so 6 years ago when the market crashed, people started getting out. They tried to go and find real jobs, so to speak, quote unquote. And but just recently, in the last probably 18 months, we've seen a lot of people going to get the real estate license because people are starting to make money again. Houses are starting to sell again. And that's been nice.
So now the culture, it seems very collaborative. You guys are helping each other out. You guys are training people well.
We are we're a profit sharing company.
So that's always attractive to people, right?
Passive income is good.
So now how does that play out in real life inside of a given office?
So, you know, basically the more profit, the more share. And so you've got an environment that where other agents want other agents to win. And so let's say a new listing comes in the market. We'll blast it out to the office and see if anybody has a buyer, you know, buyer's needs to find listings and things like that. And that helps each other win, and then celebrating victories and things like that.
So now how do I win if you sell the house?
Well, you're going to represent the seller. I'm going to represent the buyer.
Right? So we're going to work together.
Correct.
How about technology? Technology, obviously, a tremendous number of advances in that field. How has it impacted the real estate profession?
Well, we've had a couple of things. We just came out with a brand new mobile app. So our clients can actually search like realtors. And so they can click on their smartphone, pull up the app anywhere where they're located on their GPS. They can pull up every house that's listed for sale. So that's been a really cool thing and fun feature. A lot of our realtors aren't even using the MLS anymore because it pulls the data right from the MLS. So that's neat. We've also got we just came out with a new software inside Keller Williams called eEdge. And basically it's a complete, you know, database system that takes you from lead to close, and it's a paperless solution as well. So that's helped our agents you know, be more successful.
Now, there was a period of time where there was a million for sale by owner, you know, and then you don't see those anymore.
Actually, you know, we're in the middle of a listing crisis right now.
A crisis?
Yeah, listing crisis. There are there's about 4 to 5, you know, potential buyers for every listing on the market right now.
Really? It's that competitive?
It is that competitive. And we're starting to see for sale by owners come back into the marketplace. But, you know, the National Association of Realtors comes out with statistics that for sale by owners typically lose about 13% when they sell their house on their own versus listing with a realtor.
Now, that seems, because you save, theoretically, the commission.
You're trying to save 6, and you end up losing 13, so go figure.
So now, what's a compelling reason why I should use an agent rather than do it myself?
Well, you know, it's full service. When you negotiations, paperwork, all of the contracts, liability, and things like that, you're going to be better service with a full service agent than listing it on your own. And then, you know, it's the same theory. If you go in to buy a watch into a watch store and there's a salesperson, the watch is in the box with the price tag on it, you typically expect to pay full price. If you go to garage sale and there is no salesperson, would you pay full price for the watch?
No.
Right. Same thing. For sale by owners, there is no salesperson involved. People think and expect to negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your role in the organization, do you spend a great deal of time recruiting as well as producing, or how do you spend your days?
I'm in charge of really four things: growth, productivity, profit, and then, of course, culture.
That's it, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
Wow.
And then I've got a great team of support around me, too. I've actually got 8 people on my staff, and then I've got an agent leadership council that helps, you know, hosting parties and teaching classes and things like that. But growth is where I spend the majority of my day.
And growth in terms of more agents?
Yeah, more agents and more productivity, helping the agents be more productive.
So how do you, what's your pitch to get somebody who's considering being an agent?
You know, typically agents are referred to me, and so they're already pitched before they get there.
So they're already interested in being an agent.
That's right.
And so now they're deciding what company to affiliate themselves
Correct.
With?
And when you walk into my lobby, I actually have 4 plaques on the wall that say best place to work.
So that helps your job?
That's
got to
help.
Yeah. That makes it pretty compelling.
So tell us a little bit about the path. Let's say that you had a really eager, ambitious, modestly intelligent radio producer. Decided he wanted to shift gears and he wanted to be a real estate agent. Walk us through.
Are you trying
to
tell me something?
Would you like to meet today at 1 or tomorrow at... No, you know, you can go to, we use the Georgia Institute of Real Estate at the Atlanta Board, and we have a scholarship program to get agents in and get their license. And that's typically a 2 to 3 week process in class. They can also do it online. Then they take a school test, and then they take a state test. And then once they're in, the onboarding process for us, we have an agent service person that gets them in the door, and then we immediately put them into coaching, which is, that's what we do best, is training and coaching. And so I've got a launch agent coach that helps agents go from 0 to $60,000 in gross commission in their first year.
Wow.
As a minimum.
So it's kind of, they're an apprentice type role or
no,
assistant?
They are their own, they're their own independent contractor, but right. We just coach them. You know, our value proposition is training and coaching, and so we believe we can help agents, you know, get to that level.
So now what's that look like in real life?
Am I
in the car next to you? Like, how's this working?
You can be. Yesterday, we had a field trip. One of my buyer's agents took about 10 agents out and literally showed property to them and taught them how to show.
So then they just gave an example as if they were buying, so then they can see what it looks like from the other side.
Lots of training in the classroom and that sort of thing. We do about 6 training events every week in-house, and then we host about, it could be as many as 15. And then they meet weekly with their coach. They have like a 90-day kind of commitment to excellence program.
So this is a very tight curriculum.
Like,
you guys have this mapped out almost to the day?
And you know what? That's Keller Williams' philosophy, that everything has a model.
Mm-hmm.
And so no matter where you are, whether you're beginning in your launch phase or you're in a growth phase, which we say growth phase for us is between 2 and 6 million in sold volume.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go to the achievement phase, which is really 6 million plus, and at that point you're ready to hire an assistant, which we train you how to do. You're ready to, you know, start hiring buyer's agents and showing specialists or listing specialists.
So the expectation prior to that hiring an assistant is this is your job, this is your business, right?
This
is your
right.
business. You're responsible for marketing it and operating it.
Yep, and there's only $1 productive activity, which is prospecting.
Uh-huh. And then you give them the path to how to be a good prospector?
Yep, we actually give them the path. Gary Keller wrote a book called The Millionaire Real Estate Agent.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea and the philosophy behind the book is that you can hire yourself out of the business and have a business that functions without you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we teach them how to potentially build a 7th level real estate team to where they can go out and run other businesses.
While this
choose.
Is kind of running in the background.
Now, not everybody wants to do that, of course, right?
Just you.
Yeah, well, all of my agents do, of course.
So how does that work? Like, how do you build this prospecting machine?
You know, it's pretty methodical, actually. You take...
It's not going to be easy. You can't just run ads on Google, right?
Well, you can, certainly, but you've got a sphere of influence, and the best way to get business is to treat people right and keep in relationship with them, and then you'll get referral business. So if you take care of your customers, then clients...
But how do you get that first customer? I've never done this before. Everybody needs a first customer.
So I tell agents when you come in, you need 100 people in a database. You need their name, you need their address, you need their cell, birthday if you can get an email, and then you just put them on a touch program that's designed in our eEdge, our marketing program that we have. And for every 12 people, you should expect to close 2 deals a year if you're in relationship with them. And that's straight out of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent book that was written by
Gary Cohn. So I guess over time he's counted how many people it takes and how often people move.
He interviewed 120 millionaire agents, no kidding. And that's the number that he came up with. And so 12 to 2, they say 12 to 2 instead of 6 to 1 because one is a past client and one is a referral.
Uh-huh. And so that's important. You need the referrals.
You got to get referrals. And then kind of really the foundational piece for a business in real estate is farming. And so geographic farming would be like a niche area that you could draw a 1 mile radius around.
And you should be the expert. And the go-to person in that part of the town.
That's right. Yep.
Well, you lost me personally at test, but I think that's part of what this whole process
is. I thought he would have lost you at work.
Well, he did. That's the other thing. But I think if I had a work ethic and was a little better at math, I think I would.
You got it.
But that's part of what these processes are designed for, though. But, man, does that speak so well to your culture. The training and development, the investment you guys make in your people is nothing short of amazing. That's really to be applauded.
Yeah, well, then that's why they win every year.
Exactly.
You don't become best place to work by accident.
Right. All right. So where can our listeners who do have work ethic, are a little bit better at the math, and are willing to invest time and energy in this, what's the best way for them to reach out and learn
more? Two sites. If you want to learn more about the Rawls Group, you can go to rawlsgroup.org. And then if you want to learn about the Keller Williams First Atlanta office, they can go to kwatlanta.com.
All right, John Fountain. Thanks so much for joining us, man.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. How about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
You got it.
All right. Next up on Results Matter Radio this morning, we have with us from Sigital.
With a C.
Well, I don't know how many typos are on my form because this says Dr. Gary McGraw.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that for real?
That's real.
A typo.
Welcome to the show, man.
I put it on the form. Must be true.
So what do you hear? You're from Virginia. How'd you find us? You just were knocking on doors? How'd you get in here?
The PR people found you. So that's good news, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, you won't need that real estate job after all.
Perfect.
Watch it.
We're doing unskilled jobs, which is software engineering, basically.
Right, so there's lots of those available, right?
There, if you want to be one of those, all you got to do is get a piece of paper and stick software engineer on there.
I got my doctorate from Code Academy. As a result,
we have a lot of software that we're all relying on that's not working properly. Mm-hmm. And that's what my company, Sigital, does all day, mostly for Fortune 50 companies. We're opening an office in Atlanta tonight.
Tonight.
So we're going to have a big event over at the Biltmore. And it's co-sponsored by the TAG people, if you know that
Very
group.
Nice. Yes, we do. And are you working with the Hippopotamus people in the basement of the Biltmore?
I don't know.
I'm sure you'll get to know them.
Good. So Marcus came to help me launch the thing tonight with an event. We're going to talk about software security and computer
Is Marcus
security.
Talk or he's just your
he
prop?
He nods. He's nodding.
I talk.
And so, Marcus, your last name is Ranum?
Yes.
All right.
And you're with Tenable?
Yeah, I'm the chief security officer of Tenable. We're a company that does vulnerability management. So we're kind of on the back end of the process that Gary is trying to help improve. The software engineers write bad software that people get broken into. And what my company does is builds workflow tools that allow you to manage and repair the software once you've got it fielded.
Hey, let's use an example. How about a mobile app for real estate?
Yeah.
Okay, hypothetically.
If you had to go after an app like that, what do you think you'd do? Maybe change the selling price? I don't know.
You might change the selling price. You might see what somebody else was, get someone's customer list and then start farming it.
But,
So you'd go after their database.
This is like Meta Millionaire.
It sounds like you're prospecting right now for business.
No, not really.
Just get your real estate license.
If the programmer who wrote that interface between the mobile app and the database didn't do a good job, there might be a bug that you'd be able to exploit.
Wait, did you just say if?
When?
What's the probability that they didn't do a good job?
About 90%, maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
I think an important point here is that if welders welded as badly as software engineers code, you would not walk by any ferro-concrete buildings.
So you wouldn't be able to go anywhere in Atlanta downtown.
Or fly in an airplane or just about anything.
Is this stuff that maybe we don't want to know about?
You do not want to know. But unfortunately, we all depend on software to do the right thing.
And under the ugly, there's more ugly. and it's ugly all the way down.
So now, what are you guys doing to protect us from this problem?
So we are teaching people who build systems how to do the right thing. And we're tooling them up with advanced high-tech tools to look for vulnerabilities of the sort that Marcus's company tracks so that they can fix the stuff while they're building it. Instead of this idea of old computer security used to be you had a thing that was broken and you had all these bad people. And the notion was to stick a device between the bad people and the broken stuff. What do we call that?
A firewall. You're dissing me here.
Sorry. It was a good idea at the time.
And it's still a good idea.
So he came along in the mid-90s and said, I got a simple question. How come all that stuff is broken?
Right.
And it turns out that no one had a real good answer for that.
So what's the answer? You're a doctor. You should know this.
So the answer really is to think about security and think about reliability and think about safety while you're building a system, not later when you're done.
But what about, like, there's this whole lean startup methodology where they're just trying to put minimum viable product out there and by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that that opens some problems?
Yeah, that's real bad.
That's real bad?
That's a real bad thing.
Well, there's a whole industry built on this.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's an industrial design problem, really, is what we're talking about. You know, the thing about software is it's so mutable. You can build a castle out of thin air, and the cost of the materials is basically zero. So anybody who wants to play in this game can play in this game. And
from the consumer side, it looks like it's a castle.
It all looks the same.
Right? Because the consumer can't tell. There's a million holes in the wall, and the welds aren't that good.
Right.
It looks perfectly fine to us as consumers. Right.
And, you know, the model is exactly the same as with, you know, real estate or anything else.
Welding. Let's go back to
we'll
Blake.
Go back
it's
to
all
building.
About Blake here.
Well, I mean, if you've got a if you've got a building and the...
Gotta get the governor to bring him some tech.
Exactly.
If the foundation of the building is bad, you have a serious problem once you've sold that building. And what's going on with a lot of software, and again, this is what my company does, you know, you'll get a million users out there with some piece of software. And what if they've got it installed all over the internet and it's got a vulnerability that some 14-year-old kid can walk through? That's a serious problem.
And there's a bunch of 14-year-olds.
We're making more, actually. They're going to live in those houses that he's selling. So here's the big issue, you know. There's a lot of software that runs the economy that really matters. If you think about multinational banks,
right.
You think about Coca-Cola. Turns out they've got a ton of software over there. Think about AT&T. There's some big industries in Atlanta that are building very important software, and they've got to get their act together.
Right. So we don't care as much as, like, some guy's got an app and it, you know, takes a picture.
It's not for consumers. Yeah.
Right. So that's not a... You don't care about them.
Well, we do care about them. Well, we want to protect them against their will.
But you want to really protect these big companies that have a lot of data that's really, like, you know, there's a ton of healthcare data out there. There's a ton of financial data out there.
So almost rightly. So the idea is these big companies are making software for their consumers.
Right.
Their consumers are putting trust in the banks.
Right.
We're helping the banks deserve that trust and protect the people that are using the software at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your favorite part about this work? Because I can tell you, I mean, you really do have a good time.
I do have a good time.
Is it like puzzle solving? Is that?
A little bit. I mean, it, taking a look at a system that's already built and figuring out how it breaks is always gleefully fun. We have to pretend it's really serious and we can't laugh when we break software.
Right.
But it's really kind of fun working on stuff that people use every single day. I mean, everybody in here has a smartphone sitting out. We're all disarmed. They're all sitting on the table. And... You know, talk about security implications. This thing now has everybody you know, and it has the ability to buy stuff at Starbucks, at least now.
Right.
Pretty soon it'll be buy it everywhere.
Right. Trade your stocks on it.
Everything. It's like if you lose this, you're really completely screwed. You think it was bad to lose your wallet back
right.
in the
day. Right. Now it's your phone. Right.
Yeah, now it's your wallet and everybody else that you knew in the world ever.
So it's an exciting time. So you're optimistic about the future. What do you think the future holds for this cybersecurity issue and arena?
So cybersecurity has made some great strides. It's growing incredibly fast, about 8.9% in this economy. And the software security is a part of cybersecurity, is growing twice that fast, about 20%. We know what to do. We know how to do it. We know who should do it. And now we just got to get down to having the big companies adopt these ideas. And they're adopting them quickly. So we're watching this market explode, and we're completely psyched at Cigital.
So now, when you come to a market like Atlanta, how do you attack it from a business standpoint?
We're already involved with a lot of global multinationals that have presence in Atlanta. So we're starting with them, of course.
So you start with them, and then you've already had a relationship based on in your other locations?
That's right. So headquarters is in Washington. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's in Virginia, just far enough away from Washington, which right. team seems to be turned off at the moment. It's a good thing.
Is that good for you?
It doesn't matter to us. We don't do much
no
business.
Government work?
Not much.
Because they don't have a need?
They don't know what they're doing, turns out.
Is that what it is?
They're really good at offense, not so good at building stuff right.
So now, you come to Atlanta, you have relationships with existing companies. So how do you kind of penetrate the market and get other people aware of what you guys are offering?
Well, this launch that we're doing tonight is an example of that. So we want the tech community to know that we're here,
right.
that we're working on this problem, that if you need help with software security or the people that are building your software, I mean, you guys don't build it. Surely somebody built that for you.
Yeah. Some 14-year-old kid.
Well, how do you control the 14-year-old so that they're not just shipping you junk?
Right.
And awareness that we're in the market will help.
So you become kind of a partner with the company to kind of protect them to make sure that their software people are doing a good job?
Yeah, both Cigital and Tenable do that. So we're about trusted advisor roles and relationships with the people.
And who do you typically work with, the IT, CIO?
So at Cigital, we actually work with the chief security officer or the chief risk officer, sometimes even the founder or the CIO. Often at a very, very high level. And the kind of work that we do propagates down into the organization. This may come as a surprise, but if you look at a customer of ours like JPMorgan Chase, it turns out that they have 15,000 developers. You thought they were a bank, didn't you?
15,000?
Turns out they're a software company. And the same thing with Goldman Sachs, with Bank of America, with, you know, so about 60% of our revenue currently comes from large financial services institutions.
And Atlanta's a good fertile ground for that, right?
Well, New York's a little better.
Right, but Atlanta's
good.
And
London's a little better, but Atlanta's good.
Because don't we do a lot of financial IT security here already?
Sure. There's some important financial institutions down here.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, software is everywhere. You know, it's like the water soaking down into the roots of society, and you can't avoid software anymore.
And one of the most fascinating things about it is that you don't need any kind of license or qualification to produce it. You could be, you could hang out your shingle and write the next 15 million user app, and
you could just go to Fiverr.com.
Yeah, I mean, so you're talking about training people up, right? to do these skilled labor things like plumbing and welding, there's no such test or qualification for being a software engineer.
Yeah, you actually have to know how to weld to be a welder. but to be a programmer, it's actually an advantage if you don't know how to program.
Is that where the 90% fail rate comes from?
I'm afraid it is. And that's what our crusade is against. We're trying to build stuff.
Are you trying to build like certifications where they have to pass tests and regulate it? Because they... You know,
no.
You people tend to be more libertarian than that.
That's right. That doesn't seem to work.
So we're not sure. What works?
So McMonkey McBean and the Stars on Machine from Sneetches. I'm not sure if we can make one of those, but that'd be great. And then we could put the stars on, take them off, and charge everybody till they run out of money.
But so then what works, though? So you just have to hire companies that can vet this and protect the companies from the unqualified software people they've hired?
What you need to do when you're developing your software is you need to have a decent architecture for it, and you know one of the prevailing trends in the industry is to produce software as quickly as possible because there's a time to market advantage where the first person who comes out with a new app that does whatever has an advantage over whatever, but so they have an advantage over everybody else, and so the market pressures are to do things quick and dirty, whereas what you know Gary's talking about is following a more methodical and quality-oriented approach. And, you know, we've got a quality versus quantity issue, and you need to train the engineers how not to make those kinds of mistakes.
So here's a question for you. You think that Georgia Tech professors teach their kids that are coming out of computer science school about software security?
I would guess the answer is no by the way you're looking at me.
You know, they're beginning to do it. They're beginning to do it. But it's so brand new that, you know, we're
security is brand new.
Software security is brand new. The idea of computer security has been around since we decided to attach everything together on this wonderful thing called the internet.
Right.
And it takes time for these kinds of things to move into a society. I mean, I'm pretty sure that early in the Industrial Revolution, you could be a welder by just simply saying, I'm a welder. And then after enough buildings failed and enough bridges failed, then you probably had people going along and saying, you know, actually, we want to see qualifications that allow you to say that you're a welder. We want to know that you actually know how to weld and that people who are designing bridges actually know how to design bridges. We're just not there with software yet. The software industry, you know, really is fairly new.
It's coming. It's coming. And as you know, security, super hot. You want some sex appeal for software? Just say security.
And so how do you know where you're at in terms of progress?
You mean when you're doing this stuff?
Yeah, like how do you measure?
That is a really very important and hard question. So
you want to pass?
Nah, I'll take it. So it turns out that people in security usually do take a pass. And unfortunately, there's no magic box that we can put software in, turns green if everything's great, or turns red and goes.
Because again, to the customer, it looks like it's working.
Yeah.
So there's no magic box.
But what we have to do is measure the firms that are producing that software and make sure they're doing the right kind of stuff while they're building it. And we have a project, in fact, called the BSIM that does exactly that. We've got 75 firms that are being scientifically measured. That's what the doctor nonsense is about.
That's why they hire you.
That's right? Why they hire me, so I can put my imprimatur on the thing.
You're the certifier of the certification that your company does.
So now we can compare 26 financial services organizations, right, like Wells Fargo and Bank of America and JPMorgan Chase, to each other, and we can compare them to Microsoft and EMC and Google and the other software companies that are doing software security. And we've built a community of like-minded people working on this hard problem.
And one of the metrics that you use for comparison is vulnerabilities, and that's what my company does. We manage, we track flaws.
So you're testing it. You're like kind of poking around, and you're trying to see, like, if you have a hose and it looks like the hose is perfectly fine, and then you put a lot of water through there at a high rate and a lot of volume, and you see, you know, water squirting out of all these things that you couldn't see with the naked eye. Is that what you do?
Yeah, and we make a whole suite of tools, but one of the things that we have is a piece of software that essentially goes out and looks at your network and all the software that you've got installed on it and builds a list of all the things that has known flaws.
So people don't even have a list of the stuff they're running.
So say that again?
It goes and it finds what's on your network, and then it says, you've got this web server on your internal office network here, and this web server is vulnerable to 16 different things that any kid hacker could walk through.
So it's a test of vulnerability?
Yeah, and so it builds you a list of the vulnerabilities that you can then prioritize, and then it tracks your ability to close them.
And then so it's like a checklist. Now I can go down and say, okay, I can solve these are easy or these are hard, and I can attack these.
That's what you have to do if you build it wrong in the first place.
If you build it wrong in the first place.
Which we've been doing, so there's plenty of room for both.
So we're kind of tracking the flaws. We're tracking the flaws that get through and get out into production and that are impacting people.
Have you ever tried to done this test and it's like, oh, there's no flaws? This is amazing. These guys are perfect.
That would be kind of like searching a high-rise apartment building and finding no cockroaches. It's theoretically
possible. What an analogy.
It's,
I love it.
It's theoretically possible.
It's theoretically possible.
Okay. Maybe in Singapore.
Now, you do your test. You know, the company is probably pretty confident, right? They think that they're okay. I mean, they know there's a problem, but they don't think there's like a terrible problem.
You know, here's the deep secret of geekdom. The stuff kind of sort of works, and so you sort of stand there just hoping that it keeps on working. And then when it fails, you hit Control-Alt-Delete.
But so, go tell me a thing. What's the worst that you've seen?
I've seen major online presences that have vulnerabilities that have been widely known in the hacker community for 6 to 9 months, and they're on some major system.
What company does it? You don't have to say the name of the company. Just what does it rhyme with?
Oh, these might be energy companies that do smart
systems. It rhymes with Radio X.
Okay, look, I wouldn't doubt that.
But you know, Gary's really cheerful about this. I'm a little bit more of a negative.
You
and
have
gloomy.
Been doing it longer than I have, Marcus, but yeah. Not too much longer.
Yeah, I'm pretty negative and gloomy. But you know, his job is to tell these software engineers that their baby is ugly.
Right. Yeah.
You know, my job is just to track
and ugly. I do it in a friendly way, like, hey, those three arms are going to come in handy.
Right, one day. Yeah. That's going to be great for you.
But so my job is I just track the ugly babies.
And there's quite a few.
Yeah, and I can say, 99% of your babies are ugly.
Yep.
Before we wrap, I want to give a plug for, is it your show, Gary, or the two of you do it together?
So we're going to do a fireside chat, and it's going to be mostly aimed at fellow geeks,
right.
A little bit geekier than our conversation this morning, about why is software still so bad, and what are we going to do about it from a security perspective?
Fantastic. That's and you have a radio show as well, right?
I have a podcast called Silver Bullet, the Silver Bullet Security Podcast. We've got about 10,000 listeners every month. That's at www.cigital.com/silverbullet.
That's CIGITAL.com.
That's correct.
All right, and this thing tonight, I interrupted you.
Please join us tonight, if you can, at the Biltmore Hotel at 7 o'clock. You got to register in advance, so go to the TAG website and register if you want to come. We'd love to have you there.
Great. And then, Marcus, are you allowed to talk about your company?
Yeah, my company is Tenable Security. We've got a website, tenable.com. I occasionally blog on our site. You can search for my name if you care to read my various rants. And I used to do an audio podcast. And one of the things that I have to say is it's incredibly difficult to produce high quality audio programming. And I quit because it was just too hard.
And
so
Marcus,
my hat's off to you.
And you have no desire to come to Atlanta.
I'm in Atlanta every so often, yeah.
But Gary, your company is opening an office here.
We are, and we're hiring. We got 25 openings. These are openings, as I said before, in the unskilled trades.
Of software development.
Of software development. We're looking for people who know a lot about software and maybe a little bit about security. It's harder to learn about software than it is to learn about security.
And you have a good training program.
Absolutely. That's
best in class.
That's what we do an awful lot of. Mm-hmm. But we've got openings all over planet Earth, including in Atlanta.
See that, Blake? We're bringing jobs.
I have to say they really do.
I feel
know
like I'm going to call my welders and ask them if they'll go build me an underground bunker out of
That's a good call, Blake. I like that. Could you have them build me one too?
when I was listening to you guys earlier, I was thinking, you could do a really cool integrated system where you have the welders and stuff build the building and then also be real estate agents. And they could go and they could say, look, here, why don't you buy this building we built?
See that?
We can put that business plan in.
I just keep looking for cockroaches over my shoulder.
and we'll tell you how ugly your web app is.
We'll change the price to -$50,000.
All right. Well, thank you all for being part of the show. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Paid, and we will see you all next week on Results Matter Radio.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.